This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Good to be with you today. Jeff Stein in about 30 minutes to talk national politics with him. Patrick back in the studio. Hey, Patrick, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing well, just bracing for the rain.
Well, and good news is it does sound like it's mostly rain for us. I was looking at Sven's latest forecast today. It looks like we could get a little snow, some snow showers tomorrow. But once again, he's the first to say the ground's way too warm for it to stick. It sounds like there's a chance of anything. If there were any accumulation, although once again, it's not going to stick around for very long, it'd be Saturday. It sounds like now a front's going to come through on Saturday on the back end of this storm. And in the Twin Cities, we could see maybe a little bit more, half an inch or something like that. But like, again, it's not going to stick around long. North of us is where they're going to get that. And so it is a something if you're going up to the range or going up to the northwestern Minnesota, particularly, just be advised, you might come across some snow flurries up there, 2 inches, few inches up that way. You don't have to rake anything, do you yet, Patrick?
No.
You have an apartment or a condo or whatever?
No, it's all still kind of hanging around on the trees, or got mowed under, I think, too.
Well, I've that was what I was going to ask. So you do your own raking. You have a yard to rake.
Yes, we do have leaves in the yard.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, I'll say you are not the only one that is having the same problem I'm having and a lot of other people are having. I've got trees that still are pretty much full of leaves. And we've talked with Sven, and hopefully Sven will join us tomorrow for his usual segment. Did you hear last week, Patrick, when he said that the thing that he thinks is missing is that real cold night where that tells all the trees, okay, now it's over. You know, kind of, do you remember him saying that, I think it was last week?
Yep, exactly. I do remember that.
I think he's exactly right, because my guess is going to be we're going to get cool here over the next few days. It's going to get cool. It's going to stay cool till about Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. And I think we'll see all the trees that still have leaves on them just drop in unison. That's going to be my guess. But the problem is the canopy of leaves is being stubborn. Minneapolis will collect leaves, brush, and other trimmings through the end of next week. There are no plans to push back the date despite the abundance of leaves that are still in the trees. So if your leaf pickup in Minneapolis is on Monday, this upcoming Monday, that's it. So bundle up. I hope it's dried out enough for you on Sunday to get the rest of those leaves up. And hopefully the leaves are off the trees. St. Paul residents participate. Citywide garbage problem have a bit more of time, though, through November 30th. Those in the suburbs could experience time crunch, too. Basically, Randy's Environmental Service, which services customers about 90 metro area cities and townships, said the company plans to pick up yard waste for its customers through the week of November 19th, which was the original plan. We don't really see that changing. So, you know, you have basically, for most places, next week, and that's it. Weather is always variable and impacts when leaves come on down. I don't ever recall it being this late. Peak raking is usually the last week of October. I've already raked twice since last October. This is a naturalist, Jim Gilbert, making that comment. Temperature of the Twin Cities October slipped below freezing only once. So that's one of the reasons why I think they're holding on. So, yeah, it's this is a bit of an issue. And you need to, what I would advise you to do is if you go to your city's webpage, they generally under, you know, yard waste and refuse, they'll have the dates on there. But if you are, your last week is next, or last week of pickup is next week, you got to have it out on Monday. If you're in Monday pickup, it's got to be out Monday. So regardless of, you know, whether it dries out or anything, you've got to get out there and get them up. And that's, yeah, because that's the end of it. Usually most cities don't do it past the week of Thanksgiving. And of course, Thanksgiving is the very next week afterwards. So you'll have to see, just find out, check your own city and see where they go from there. But, you know, it's odd. It is very, very odd. in regards to how the leaves are coming down. 952-946-6205. I've not talked too much about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, and I'm not going to really talk too much about it outside of, I'm just going to say this. I have it's very rare you see such a fixed trial today. There used to be trials this fixed, and everyone saw how fixed they were back in the 60s, especially when African Americans were involved with them, or any minority group for that matter. But if I'm sorry, as just an observer here of this trial, you got a judge that seems to be trying to give Kyle Rittenhouse a hug every time he comes on by, a wildly incompetent prosecutor. I mean, this could be one of the worst lawyers I've ever seen in my life. And I'm going to guess this is all by design. I'm guessing this entire thing is by design. It's being politically pulled here to try to get Kyle Rittenhouse off the hook and free and clear of any kind of criminal charges for murdering two people and shooting a third. Murder. He murdered them. We got video of it. He murdered those people. But because he was a patriot. Bull. He was a punk who should never have a gun in his life. And I know some people say, well, Matt, the civil trial, they'll take every dime they've got from the family, because he was an underage minor when it happened. So the whole family is on the line, and they're going to take every damn dime from them. And I guarantee there is a slight bit of joy. But the idea that I'm going to see in 10 years, Kyle Rittenhouse in a pay-per-view boxing match with some former NFL player, God, please. This kid deserves to go to jail for life for murder. And I don't want to buy this argument. He was a young kid. No. Let's just be honest. Anyone that's saying he was a young kid, if it was a black kid and they were 4 or 5 years even younger than him, they'd be saying, lock him up for life. This guy is a punk. He was out there. He should never had a gun, and he murdered people in the street. And, you know, like I said, this is the most fraudulent trial I have ever seen. I mean, there are some fraudulent things I've ever seen. This trial is just a joke at this point. Why don't you basically strap on your knee pads and give the kid a real send-off at the end of the thing, okay? I mean, seriously. It's just a freaking joke. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It is, yeah, I don't have a lot of patience for this stuff. Public records advocacy groups on Wednesday. They're a little miffed at the governor for emails. They've asked the administration of Governor Tim Walz for emails from an alternate non-public facing email address used by the governor. Public Media Record Media, a nonprofit group, published emails related to a May 2021 request for correspondence related to the state's response to the civil unrest caused by George Floyd's murder, as well as the subsequent trial of convicted former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. The group held a news conference on the matter, as well as others, on Wednesday morning, saying it has not heard from the Walz administration about its request. Matt Erling, the executive director of the nonprofit, said in an interview with his request organization, learned about the secondary email account, tim.mankato@state.mn.us, from a reliable source, asking the administration to confirm it is preserving data from that email account. We're simply trying to verify it, he said, explaining the group has yet to receive confirmation the administration is preserving emails associated with that account. A spokeswoman for Walz said the governor only uses a single state email for correspondence. The governor has one state email address. It is secure. We have always searched that account in response to data requests for email from the governor, the Walz spokeswoman said. In accordance with public records law, we have shared tens of thousands of pages of communications from our office, including emails to and from the governor's office, and will continue to do so. The reformer, this was published, was aware of the other media outlets inquiring about alternative email addresses. The reformer emailed the account but received no response. They didn't also receive a bounce-back message. State Representative Peggy Scott, a Republican of Andover, seized on the group's press conference to demand transparency from the Walz administration. Now, this is where it's going to get funny. I'll get back to Peggy Scott here in a second. I hope this data practice act request is quickly fulfilled and all the governor's correspondence, whether it is from widely known or internal accounts, is included, Scott said in a statement. Legislators like Scott, however, are not required to provide similar data to the public. The legislator is exempt from the state public records law, which is a joke. Which I will say, first of all, but I want to step back for a quick second on this whole thing. I don't know if the governor does have a secondary email account. In this day and age, I would find it very difficult to believe if he wasn't, especially when you're talking about the two things they think he was emailing people left and right about on this private account, the aftermath of George Floyd's murder and the trial of Derek Chauvin. We would have, oh, well, we've got, you know, 100 emails here from various people from this email, which is tim.mankato@state.mn.us. You would think, and I mean, I got to believe that if that's the case, I mean, there would be plenty of emails on record that email address would be in, and it doesn't sound like that is part of the case. It sounds like we've heard of that there's this email address. We're trying to get all the data records that are confirmed by it, and what the governor's office is saying is that the only account he uses is this one, so I'm not quite sure where this necessarily came from. I'm also kind of wondering if this is a little like Keith Ellison's divorce record sort of thing. They think there's blood in the water. Henceforth, they're going for it. And then when all of a sudden the Star Tribune and the conservative news outlet in town all of a sudden do succeed in opening up those court records, it's, oh, it wasn't Keith Ellison who is abusive in that marriage. It was the ex-wife. Well, we were just asking the question. So it kind of does, to a point, make me ask the question of whether or not how valid this entire request is. Is it just something, I mean, it could be just an email account they set up as a dummy account to start off when he first got in there. I don't know. Could there be 5,000 emails in there? I don't know. But they're basically saying the state email account, the governor's email account, which is pretty well known, is the only one he uses. So this does seem to a point like a bit of a fishing expedition. I will say the reformers' point of saying they emailed him and they received no bounce back message. Now that leads me to believe the email address is open and working, but they might not have received a response or a bounce back message just because it's, like I said, it's an account that was set up when the governor got ready to take office. No one ever used it, and it's, you know, there. So my guess is it's basically jam packed full of spam if it does exist or not. Because like I said, I just can't imagine it wouldn't be a much larger paper trail. Think about the federal emails that he would have had to send or this. I mean, I don't know. It just is. Are they expecting to find the governor saying, I really hate Derek Chauvin. I'm a god. I'm a god. I can't stand him. Now, if I'm the governor, and get back to Peggy Scott here just right now. If I'm the governor, I'll tell you what I do. Is I look at Representative Peggy Scott and say, here's the deal. If you make every correspondence the legislature has in any given year preserved for public posterity, then I'll save my phone records, all that stuff too. We can save secondary emails. We can save all that stuff. If you want to do this game, if transparency is an important thing, then it should be important for the legislature as well. So, Peggy Scott, as long as you're willing to preserve every single one of your emails, which right now, Peggy Scott is frantically running to her computer, delete, 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 delete. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. If State Representative Peggy Scott wants to preserve all of her emails, oh, I would sure love to read the ones from the House minority leadership. Oh. Get me a box of popcorn and a warm fire. Oh, let me just cuddle up and start reading. Ah! Oh, I don't know. It seems to me, it's like I said, I think that to a point, I could be wrong. I want to be very clear here. I could be wrong. This could be the governor has a secondary email account. But like I said, in this day and age, you use it for more than like one or two email addresses, which is the allegation that's being put out here, is that he used it for all this stuff for George Floyd after George Floyd and the Derek Chauvin. What was going on there? Well, gosh, I mean, if he did that, there'd be a paper trail. I got to believe there would be national, U.S. government emails, other people that, would have the email and say, oh, there it is. It exists. So we'll have to see. It does feel like, I could be wrong. It does feel like it's a fishing expedition a la Keith Ellison's divorce records. But at the same time, if he's received, I don't know what is the guideline on this? Does he have to save, if he has an email address where he sends great job to his nephew in a soccer match, is that saved for posterity? I don't know if it is or not. Now, if he sends it on the official governor's webpage, or email page, sure. It does have to be saved, but I don't know. I don't think you have to. He has to save his private emails. So it's interesting. I think that this is, I think Republicans are right now, this is kind of one of those things where they're feeling out, trying to find places where they could attack walls in the upcoming, because they're going to have a nightmare next year. They're trying to find ways. But like I said, Representative Peggy Scott, when you're willing to start preserving all your data for public display, then you can start talking. Until then, shut your pie hole, Peg. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Stein here in about 15. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. By the way, I went and checked out my leaf pickup here. My leaf pickup, it only goes till next week. I'm going to have to go out and rake some. Hopefully the leaves are down. 952-946-6205. We talked yesterday, and it was a lovely little conversation with Anita Gall, who wrote that great, she's from Lyon County DFL out in the western part of the state. Wrote that great article on the Minnesota Reformer about what it takes for the DFL to fight in outstate Minnesota. And one of the things we kind of chuckled about, but it's going to come here, is that every Republican, Fischbach, Stauber, Emmer, and Bag of Soup, they're all going to claim, thank God, I brought you this infrastructure. And we need to make sure they don't get away with that. Now, I already know there's a lot of media in outstate Minnesota who will gladly allow them to take credit for the bill that they purposely and intentionally voted against, not because it wasn't good for their district, but because they just didn't like the president getting a victory. A lot of media out there is going to give them the pass on that. But you should really call them out and say, you didn't do this, and watch them hammerna, 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 hammerna. Axios Twin Cities details the Minnesota cut to this. This is nice. We're going to get more than $6 billion in federal funding in the coming years, including $4.5 billion for highways, $8.8 million for public transportation to improve our public transportation, $680 million for water infrastructure, huge, especially in outstate Minnesota, where many water treatment plants need updating, $302 million for bridge replacement and repairs, $100 million for broadband internet, which, by the way, still isn't enough to get us border to border, but it's going to get us a long way there. And if all we added was about, my guess would be is if the state government only put up $50 million more, we would have enough with $150 million to build at least 4G network from the border with Canada all the way to the border with Iowa. That's a pretty good deal. $20 million for wildfire prevention. Talk about something that's, thanks global warming. We sure do appreciate you sticking around. $17 million for cybersecurity. I'm going to guess that has a lot to do with the elections with the U.S. The Secretary of State. Supporters of the infusion of federal cash will provide much-needed upgrades for the state's infrastructure and create or sustain jobs through various projects. All you have to do now is drive down the road to highway, travel through the airport, try to get goods through the ports right now, and you'll see what we've fallen behind. MnDOT Commissioner Margaret Anderson Kelleher said the money will allow the agency to move forward with projects that have been put on hold due to funding. The Twin Ports Interchange project in Duluth is one example of there. Some cash will also flow directly to the cities and counties. All four Minnesota GOPers, as well as U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar, voted no on this. Republicans have criticized the package as too expensive and far-reaching. How dare you try to take care of so many problems? Those problems need to exist. That's what Republicans say. Radical tax and spend spree. Hagedorn, the bag of soup down in one, has called it a radical tax and spending spree. I want to know the first minute he takes credit for a single project funded by this new bill. Give me when the second he comes out and said, thank gosh, this new interchange. No, you didn't do that one, Jim. Bagado, you didn't do that one. Omar said she was no vote in response to the decision to move forward with the deal to vote on separate spending plan that would include funding for child care, climate change mitigation, paid family leave, among other issues. So it's, yeah, she wanted more in the package. They weren't going to give it. And I don't think it was going to pass with more, if frankly. Legislators will also have to approve some state funds to match the federal dollars. But, you know, and that's kind of the same thing that happened with the Southwest Light Rail line. There had to be a certain amount of dollars coming from the state, which, remember, funny story. Remember Kirk Doubt, the House Minority Leader? Funny story. Lied through his teeth over and over and over again, saying the bill was going to have the funding for Southwest Light Rail. Then he purposely left it out. When the Senate unanimously put it back in, he gaveled the House closed and ran away. To which then former Governor Dayton pulled out a scalpel and absolutely eviscerated him by basically using his power to pull together the money for it, as he sat there and said, I guess he said something like that. I don't know. I mean, I guess he's angry. I still do want to make sure he gets the first ride on that Southwest Light Rail, just a train by himself. We'll play the Charlie Brown sad music. Da na 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 na. He can. He can ride all the way from downtown Minneapolis alone in a train car all the way to Eden Prairie and back with just the Charlie Brown sad music the entire way. Oh, mwah. Come on, Kurt. Let's go for a ride, my friend. Oh, yeah, amazing jackass. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I would love that. Just the visual on that alone makes me very, very happy. Let's take a break. Come on back. Stein and national politics when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Jeff.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert. Noted author. You'll find his books over at Next Chapter Books, as well as also totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Politics Report is, he goes up and puts that out on KXEL, as well as also the Iowa Business Report. And he's kind enough today to join us from Cedar Falls, Waterloo. KXEL is where he is resting right now. Hi, Jeff.
So I'm imagining you in the basement of the house, and I was going to say, you're just sitting there with a T-shirt and shorts on, having some chips, doing a radio show. And then I realized, having seen the webcam from the studio, there's not much difference, is there?
It's not really a step down, is it? The professionalism seems to have escaped me in my life.
It's like not the lack of professionalism. It's you don't need the trappings that others who are all about the ego. You don't need those trappings. You're there in a Red Owl t-shirt and shorts, and it's good. That's all you need.
I'm in a Beaufort, South Carolina shirt, and I'm wearing sweatpants today because it's a little chilly in Minneapolis. You're pretty much spot on. What's that?
That's better. The sweatpants, yes. Even better.
Oh, delightful. I love how they feel after 3 or 4 days.
Sure.
This is likely my last day broadcasting down here. I'm going to try to come into the station tomorrow and see how that goes. But, you know, it's been, I got to admit, I appreciate Brett and Patrick and the work they've done being able to do this. And it, you know, the reality is the technology has caught up to us. We can actually do this and it sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the technical side sounds good. Now the content, I just do what little I can do. I'm not much help, you know.
Oh, I guarantee you I'll really bring down the show next hour. But let's get on to the rest of this hour. I love the ruling from U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan, this is the judge that got the short straw and had to hear Trump's attempt to hide key documents from the House Select Committee on the January 6th attack on the U.S. Presidents are not kings, and plaintiff is not president, is what she wrote in her ruling as she denied Trump's executive privilege claims in an attempt to stonewall the committee. I'm going to ask you point blank. Is there any way you see the Supreme Court at all? I mean, I'm not going to say it's going to be a 9-0 ruling, but I just cannot see the Supreme Court getting themselves to that level where all they would be doing is clearly covering up likely criminal behavior by the White House, former Trump White House. I can't see them getting involved in this and trying to stop Trump from getting into trouble. Is there any way in the world you see the Supreme Court ruling 5-4, which would probably be the ruling 5-4, to basically keep all of Trump's materials private and create a standard where no future president could ever be held accountable for anything they did while they were in office?
I go so far, frankly, as to say it would be 7-2. I don't think that the Trump side would get any more than 2 votes, because clearly the ones that he appointed don't feel any sense of loyalty to him, nor should they, by the way. I mean, he's got the one who says, I appointed them, why don't they do what I wanted them to do? The list of presidents who have been disappointed by rulings made by justices that they appointed, that's a very long list. Trump has the unique distinction of having appointed and confirmed, having had 3 of his nominees confirmed in a 4-year term, and I don't think he cares much for any of the 3 of them right now. Here is the thing that this is what it's going to focus on, I think, okay? I think that this is what the Supreme Court is going to focus on. This is not for public dissemination. This is for a congressional committee. And don't anybody get ahead of me on this one. I'm talking legally.
What he's saying is this, unless there are definitive legal charges you're going to file, this is not for the public view.
Well, but this is what the Supreme Court can hang their hat on. They can say this is a committee that is investigating and they have broad materials. And if they want to review them, the legal phrase is in camera, which means in private, then we trust that these duly elected representatives will do the right thing and will review the material. And if, in fact, they see that there is something so that they can file a charge, then they can go after that. There's no way to know if there's a charge that can be filed until you investigate. Now, the practical side of it is congressional committees, and I don't care who the member is, those things leak like sieves. And so Trump is saying, well, you know, they're just going to disseminate this to the public and they shouldn't do that. Well, the court has got to take Congress at its word as a co-equal branch of government when it says we just want this information for our own investigatory purposes. And then if there is a prosecution, we can then hand it over to the FBI that can get this stuff anyway. So the problem you have here is legalistics versus practicality. From a legal standpoint, it's 7-2 against Trump at the Supreme Court. But from a practical standpoint, you're going to be able to read anything that they leak within moments of it being released. But that's just how it is to live in a free society.
With the president, you cannot, I mean, and especially the standard you have here. We're just talking, as a matter of fact, about whether there's people that are wondering if Governor Walz has a secondary account, email account, and they're wondering if he's been doing business on this. And right. the his own office said, well, the only account he's using is this account for business stuff. And, you know, that's, you know, people are of the mindset, well, that we have the right to see what's in there. My guess is it's probably a dummy account they set up a long time ago, but someone thinks that there's something there. My guess is a ton of spam, but, you know,
it's the account he used to order stuff from Amazon. He doesn't use it for anything else. And if you want to go in there, help yourself. But, well, you know, this is the reason why Trump really wants that stuff to be kept back. Well, there are two things. I want to tell you, I don't know if you saw this. CNN is claiming an exclusive with the following sentence, quote, the January 6th committee is interested in Pence's inner circle, and sources say some close to the former vice president may be willing to engage. Okay, so that's number one, and that could be massively interesting and entertaining. But number two, and it comes back to something you and I talked about previously when Trump tried to have these documents withheld by the National Archivist. You know, I said at the time the committee shouldn't even bother going after it because it's a sideshow, because they're going to get enough firsthand stuff that they then can corroborate stuff through two and three different means. It might be easier with the stuff from the National Archives. But look at the list of people, Matt, that they have subpoenaed. The list of people from Trump world that they have subpoenaed under oath to talk about what happened. That is going to be far more damning to former President Trump than any of these documents that they can find. I think that, in other words, I think they have enough without it. It's going to be a lot more with it.
By the way, I actually think it's going to be 8-1. Alito is going to be the only one that goes for this. If it does, I'm actually.
You said 5-4 a minute ago.
I was asking if you thought it was any chance.
Here's the two I can think of.
What's that?
I say 7-2, and then you're like, well, I'll top that. I'm going 8-1. We're not playing name that tune, Scooter. I mean.
Well, no. But I will say, I mean, here's my 7-2. I'm guessing yours is Thomas and Alito. I'm Alito and Gorsuch. Gorsuch seems to be a little bit more loyal than Kavanaugh and Barrett. And I think Thomas, as much as it's almost out of some of his rulings have been very Scalia-like, and he and Scalia were buddies. And Scalia would never tolerate this. Scalia would have never tolerated a president, you know, withholding this stuff, because he was a pure constitutionalist. And so he's like, no, you have to turn that stuff over. That would have been the thing. I don't think Thomas would go along with it. I think it will be Alito and Gorsuch if it's a 7-2.
That's a very fair point. And then when you think of Scalia also, wasn't Barrett a Scalia clerk, I believe? And so, again, was shaped. So again, you've got the idea. And this is where partisan, and such an excellent point you just made, that from a partisan standpoint, there are politicos who say, well, why don't they vote this way or that way? When you're talking about a legal framework, you know, you've got to follow the co-equal branch of government argument. I mean, that's where I said I think that the court would hang its hat. You can't, you know, Congress has certain powers under the Constitution, and you can't have one branch of government, in essence, run roughshod over the other. Now, any attorneys in the audience who remember the first year of law school will say, well, now, wait a minute. It was the Supreme Court itself in 1803 that basically said it had the right to, forgive me, trump lawsuits or pieces of legislation that were unconstitutional. They became the super branch, if you will, by having that, if you will, veto power on the others. They kind of called it, and nobody said otherwise. It's not as clear in the Constitution, but what is clear is that Congress has certain rights, especially when it comes to investigating, and it doesn't matter either A, who the president is, or B, as you noted, who the president was. Because he's out of office. It's a whole different issue.
But and here's the difference in what you just described, because that 1803 ruling is very interesting because it's legislation that's been passed. That
yes.
when you go to the worst, in my mind, the worst decision they ever made, Dred Scott, it was, you know, the Supreme Court justices at that point specifically went out and put themselves in the mindset of white wealthy slave owners of their rights. And basically their argument was, well, their rights matter. And so they basically said slavery, there's no anti-slavery state. There's no place that can, you know, outlaw slavery. Slavery is everywhere. And that's just that. And mm-hmm. it was, you know, but it still wasn't trying to overturn a piece of legislation or rewrite the Constitution itself. And that's what would happen here with a 5-4 ruling, is that they would actually venture into new territory of rewriting the Constitution, or for a better way to say it, writing brand new legislation and then giving it the stamp of approval themselves. Which is why, as well, I think that even with the most conservative lineup there, they're not going to get in the way of this. Because, I mean, it just is, you look at Trump and you look at this, and, you know, he and his cronies are begging for some sort of wall here. The question is, who do you think is going to be the first to roll? Who do you think is going to be the first to really roll? And just when it, after a few rulings where they say, no, you guys start talking, you know, who's going to be the first to come on out and say, okay, here's exactly what happened?
This is going to be an odd response. Mm-hmm. Bernie Kerik.
That's not too odd. That's not too odd at all.
Because,
I mean, he's a New Yorker. Those New Yorkers like to save themselves.
Well, here's Kerik, who's been subpoenaed because the allegation or the rumbling is that he personally paid for hotel rooms for many of these people and created a command center. Well, a command center for what? A peaceful rally? And so I'm suggesting his name only because he's already done time. I mean, I've interviewed him about it. You know, he's done federal time and then decided to devote much of his life after prison to prison reform. That was the context in which he and Van Jones and I had a conversation. You want to talk who's the odd man out of that? Okay, but now he's much more back into the Giuliani camp, full Trump camp, full conspiracy camp. And if it comes to saving himself, to your point, since he's already, you know, has a record, you just don't know what it is that he would say. I mean, again, if they've got documentation showing that it's his credit card, okay, well, then, you know, were you just hoping that they'd show up and enjoy, well, it's not the cherry blossom time, but you get the idea.
Well, and that's not a bad pick. That's not a bad pick at all. And I think it's someone from the vice president's office. Because let's face it, I mean, the vice president's office are people there for the vice president. And sure. If anyone in that office had any wind of what was going on or any suspicion of it, I think that they're going to be the one that goes on out there, maybe without Pence's approval, but will go in there and say, okay, let me, you know, enough's enough. They wanted to kill my guy, and I want to make sure I'm on the record about it. And so my guess is going to be someone there, although Jeanine Pirro would be pretty hilarious.
this sideshow. Yes, it would be hilarious.
It would be.
One of those that they have subpoenaed, this is per CNN, Pence's former national security advisor. By the way, I didn't know the vice president had his own national security advisor. I was not aware of this, but
I knew that. Why did I know that? I mean, and that's not because I watched Veep.
I think it was because you had applied.
Oh well, it really is an open position most times. I think it was because at any point the vice president has to step into the role.
Well, I suppose that. Well, but I just figured it was one team. But that's a fair point. Well, in any case, CNN reporting, Pence's former national security advisor Keith Kellogg was subpoenaed yesterday. He was with Trump most of the day of January 6th.
Ooh.
And now here was something Pence did. I did not attend. I had no idea about it. Pence did a speaking appearance at the University of Iowa within the last couple of weeks. Not exactly a conservative hotbed. All right. And during the Q&A, someone said, who told you that you should resist Trump when he said,
oh, yeah,
you should, you know, blah, blah, blah on the votes. And he simply looked down and said, James Madison, and brought the place down. I mean, it was hilarious. So clearly, the Pence side Pence has his own aspirations, obviously. Fine, go ahead and go for it. You have nothing else to do, but I don't really see how he's got a path to anything. But obviously, his loyalists want to make sure that their guy doesn't have anything sticking to him. Maybe the committee should just take the five Pence aides that they've subpoenaed and said, by the way, with the subpoena, here is a grant of full and complete immunity. What you got? Yeah. And Pence can testify because, again, he was in the Capitol, right? And then at a secure location. He wasn't in the train wreck that was the White House at the time. Could be interesting.
The one weasel I could also see is Kayleigh McEnany. I could see her rolling on a heartbeat on that. Well, we'll have to see on that. One thing I should mention about January 6th, though. They had their first sentencing today of one of the more serious offenses. Scott Fairlamb was the one. He's a son of a New Jersey trooper, brother of a Secret Service agent who served First Lady Michelle Obama's detail. He was sentenced to 41 months in prison. So he's going to jail for a few years. The stiffest sentence handed down so far since the January 6th attempt. He is the reason why his is more. Most of the people that have pled out at this point, all the people that have before him, have been basically trespassing. And so it's been minor, although a few of the judges have said this is an attack on the democracy. You shouldn't be just going with minor charges. But needless to say, I think a statement being made here is that if you're willing to cut a deal, we're not going to throw you in jail for 20 years. But if you make us go to trial, we're going to try to put you in for as long as we can.
That is actually not, and this is me as a defense attorney talking, that is not uncommon. I mean, often prosecutors say, you cut the deal, you don't make me go to all the hassle of a trial, I'll be nicer to you in my recommendation. But if you make me work for it, everything's on the table. So that's not terribly surprising, but it is a very important distinction to note.
It's finally Infrastructure Week. We'll get to that with Jeff Stein when we do return. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us, our national and presidential expert. It is Infrastructure Week, a pretty big bill that you can't deny. I mean, I don't know how much Iowa's going to get. We were talking to her a little bit earlier that Minnesota is going to get a total of $6 billion in federal funding. Now, we have to have some matching funds there, but still a lot of good things are going to be able to get done with this money in an infrastructure that, as you and I have talked multiple times, is grossly underfunded and in many cases needing of desperate repair.
So many on the right are labeling the 19 senators and the 13 members of the House, the Republicans who voted for it, are calling them traitors. Because without the Republican votes, if the Republican House caucus had held, that bill would not have passed because the progressive squad opted out. Well, they opted out because they knew it was going to pass because they saw the Republican votes, right? Keep in mind, to all of my Republican friends who bring up this horrible bill, Donald Trump wanted $2 trillion for infrastructure, roads, bridges, internet, waterways, etc. Now, granted, different guy gets the credit for this, but it's actually a smaller bill. So everybody who's complaining about the spending and it's unnecessary, well, what was unnecessary then in Trump's $2 trillion? You know, I mean, it takes a lot of courage to vote against party, but you've got to look your voters in the eye and say, yeah, that bridge is falling apart. I voted against fixing it. Yeah, good luck.
Well, and the idea, too, I think that one of the things that it crosses my mind is, and we're talking about some of the money that's going out there, water infrastructure, $680 million in Minnesota for water infrastructure. How many small-town water treatment plants have needed to be replaced for about 30 to 40 years at this point? We have them here in Minnesota, and there's always a huge list of people and requests on any kind of Minnesota state bill and budget. But, you know, the fact is you're going to be able to fix quite a few of them and get them up to speed there. That's the bread and butter issues you and I talk about. That's how you get reelected. That's how you have coattails with your party, is you go out there and deliver on the bread and butter stuff.
Well, and we're yelling about supply chain. There have been problems getting commodities down the Mississippi River. It's not just all the interstate highway system. And so we have these bridges that were closed near Memphis, and that was really backing up transportation. So you've got to do something. It's not all broken down bridges and roads, the supply chain, but when you do have these other issues, then maybe you do what you can and then worry about hiring another 1,000 truck drivers that you can't find. But do what you can to alleviate at least one problem that right now you can't honk about supply chain interruptions and then not before improving a transportation system. It's totally disingenuous.
Well, and we also should mention as well, the thing that's taking a little bit of the wind out of his sails, the inflation number, 6.2%, highest since 1990. It's interesting when you see where the infrastructure, consumer prices are soaring, the inflation is soaring on this stuff. The reality is that it's the fact that a lot of it is that wages have not been keeping up with anything. And we finally got to a point where people are saying, well, I'd rather not work than work for garbage. And until this clarifies and rectifies itself, I just don't know how it's going to get fixed.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, when you're paying $15 and $16 and pushing $20 an hour at a fast food restaurant, consumers aren't going to want to pay $10 for the hamburger. But yet they can't get people unless you raise the pay. And so it's having a real domino effect, because post-COVID people are saying it ain't all about money. There's some of this that's about quality of life, and I'm just not going to do this job anymore. And that's something that we just don't know how to fix. I can offer you more money to get you to come work for me. I can't take care of the other part. And that's a big disconnect.
Well, it's the daycare. Don't underestimate the cost of daycare. If you're having to work two jobs just to afford daycare, that's not going to be a real big sell. Once again, we'll spotlight this. We'll also put up the Iowa Politics Report a little bit later on. Hour two, that's coming up next. Thanks, Jeff. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Hour number two on your Wednesday. Good to be with you. 5 o'clock hour here. Matt Patrick. Patrick, I wanted to bring up, I had a few people share with me, a video from a kid down at Prior Lake High School. Care 11 actually had the story on it. The principal of Prior Lake High School and district superintendent say they are investigating after a video of students using a racist slur was shared on social media. It's against black people. Principal John Bezick confirmed in a statement that a serious and disturbing racist video was posted by a student, and the school has launched an investigation into those involved. Racist messages like the one in the video create an environment that is hostile to learning. Bezick wrote in the letter to staff and families, I would like to assure students and staff that we're committed to the safety and emotional well-being. Prior Lake Savage Area School Superintendent Terry Stolak echoed Bezick's message in her own statement and promised swift and appropriate action against those involved. This is something which impacts all of us in the community, and we recognize the pain and hurt that is a result that they wrote. Patrick, I know this is HR has talked to me about this stuff before, but when did you graduate high school?
2009.
Dear God, you're a zygote. All right, so 1986. I am an old man. All right, well, okay. What? Let me ask you something, because you were. You know, that was pre-TikTok, pre-Instagram. It was just starting to get a Facebook and Twitter, I think, was just starting. Did you have anyone in your school screw up really bad like this?
There was one. Well, not like this, no.
No. When I was a junior, there I was at Edina High School, and there was a hazing ritual for band members. And some moron of the senior class, and I can't remember who this was, decided to take the used motor oil that their dad had in the back of their car and poured it over the head of one of the kids. And needless to say, it was not a good outcome. She ended up having to go to the hospital. And of course, this was in the 80s. And reminder, as much as we were talking about, what's that school up north that had the allegations of the video where there's the a violent attack on a student. It's up in the North videos. That stuff still does happen today, but it was pretty much, allowed back in the 70s and early 80s. Hazing rituals were kind of, good luck. And, you know, there was, you know, there was, you know, you were picked up at 7 a.m. and dragged around and done things. And only when you had someone do something where someone's health was definitely jeopardized by someone being just stupid, then all of a sudden did, well, we'll have to evaluate if this hazing ritual is going to continue. That was the standard back when I was in school. But that was about the only, I mean, I don't think there was anything else that happened. And I couldn't tell you the names of the individuals that were involved. I want to give, I'm bringing this up. I brought up the question why, Patrick, I asked you and my own story for this reason. In this day and age, parents, if your kid does what these kids did, and I've seen this video, and this video that I had sent to me, there's a rebuttal at the end of this saying, this is going to haunt you for the rest of your life. And it is. The kids in this video will never be able to escape this video. When they apply for a college, they'll be able to pull up this video under their name. When they go to try to apply for a job, they will be able to pull up this video under their name. They won't get into the colleges they want to. They don't want it. They won't get into the jobs that they want to get. This will be something that they will have hanging over their head for the rest of their lives. And yeah, you say to yourself, it was a mistake. Well, first of all, it's racism. That's not a mistake. That's racism. Stop trying to dismiss it as an oopsie. Racism isn't something you just, you know, oh, I got a fender bender because I wasn't watching where I was going. Oops, racism. You know, it doesn't work like that. That is probably something that has been incubated and encouraged within the home. Let's just be honest about it. That's the truth. Generally, I don't know many people who have kids who say inappropriate things where I can't look at the parent and say, well, I can see where the apple fell from the tree. That being said, I want to make sure you understand something. If your kid is stupid enough to do this, then they are going to be haunted by this for the rest of their lives. And I would hope, I would pray that down deep inside you'd say to yourself, hey, maybe I should tell my kid not to be such a racist. Yeah, that might be a good idea. That might be the way to go. Hey, don't be racist. You might want to go down that path. But the reality is that you know, even if you don't have the guts to do that, which would be the right thing, at least tell your kids to not post it online, because even if it was just a stupid thing that they said, which it wasn't, it was racism, it's going to haunt them for the rest of their lives. And that is, you know, that this is, these are, you know, folk tales at this point. These are fables. This is the same things as, you know, that you used to hear in Greek, you know, nowadays we're having them now too. It just is, it comes in the form of some idiot putting a Snapchat video out where they make a bunch of racist comments and all of a sudden their lives are freaking ruined. And how about that? To be 16 years old, and your life is freaking ruined because you had to get the racism on out. I just, you know, I guess, I mean, I will also say this in this specific case, do these kids think the internet is only Prior Lake? Do they think that this is not like an international worldwide web sort of thing? I don't know. And you know, I'm not going to get in the way of anyone that says, when you say, well, their lives are ruined, and they say, good, I'm not going to get in the way of that. Because let's face it, there's been a lot of mistakes and misjudgments and just plain stupidity to get that kid to the point where they're posting a video online making a bunch of racist statements. There's a lot of mistakes. And I don't blame anyone who says, you know what? The day and age of us being forgiving is over. I'm not going to get in the way of that. I completely and totally can understand how someone feels about that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So earlier today, I posted a story that came from Minnesota Reformer. It's a it's an editorial that was put out where basically it talks about we have to raise the taxes on the wealthy. And I think it's time for us to take a step back, time to revisit one of my favorite segments, Matt's Math Corner, and go through some numbers to make you understand that, yeah, we are at the point now where wealthy people have so much money, they are starting their own space races against each other and sending rockets into the outer space. Think about that for a second. That these people have that much money. And when I'd say they have that much money, they have that much money. Because there is a rule that we have said in America that we just dare not cross. How much is too much money? And it's an interesting question. Because there gets a point where it's too much. Let me give you an example of this. Let me preface this by saying Jeff Bezos is worth, and these are the numbers of, apparently from October, is currently worth $177 billion. Elon Musk is $151 billion. Bill Gates is $124 billion. Billion. That's with a B. That's not with an M. That's with a B. Billion dollars. So I actually thought to myself, all right, what if I spent $1 million per day, living my life, $1 million per day to live your life, times that by 365.25, because that's the amount of years that's in a year, and times that by 50. Your total is, now once again, for 50 years, for 50 years, you are living on $1 million a day. And we'll get back to that in a second. For 50 years, $1 million a day is $18,262,500,000. And I want to put this in perspective for you because I think it's very important to understand. Jeff Bezos right now, with those October numbers of $177 billion, can do that 10 times over. Step back. I want to make sure you understand what I just said. Jeff Bezos right now can pretty much live $1 million a day life for the next 500 years. He'll be a little short of 500, but he'll be okay. I don't think he'll be alive at that point. God willing, but that's a pretty big ask at this point, 400 some years. Now think about that. Now, I want you to, we all have that guy that you sit in the bar and you're just like, boy, wouldn't it be great if I won the lottery? And I've actually brought this up with friends before when you say, well, let's talk about that. When the lottery gets up to $300, $400, $500 million, what would you do with that money? Because what we don't seem to want to understand is how quickly you really don't have to worry about money when you have a lot of money. Now, once again, I want to make sure we're talking a very big difference here between someone that gets a windfall of a lottery and people like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and Bill Gates who have this extraordinary amount of wealth where they're actually starting their own space race because they can't possibly spend that money. What would be your life? What would your life be like if you had to spend $1 million in a day? I actually put some thought to that this morning. And it is an interesting concept. I went and found the most expensive hotel room in the world is a $100,000 a night jobber in Vegas, which is gorgeous. I mean, it's a lovely two-floor villa that's been, you know, custom decorated. It's just gorgeous. That's $100,000 per night. So let's put this in perspective. The most expensive, you could take the most expensive hotel room on the planet every single night, and you still have $900,000 you have to spend that day alone. You have the greatest chefs on the planet make you breakfast, lunch, and dinner. $50,000, even with the top of the line ingredients. $50,000, maybe. You get custom clothes made for you every single day. What? $20,000? Now you start to understand, okay, what are you doing with all this money? I mean, you could jump on a plane and fly nonstop constantly and still probably have $500,000 a day to spend. I mean, it is an obscene amount of money. And I want to make sure, as you think about this, I want you as you roll around in your mind, how in the world would you spend $1 million per day? Because the very next day, you're going to need to spend another million. And the very next day after that, you need to spend another million that day. And I know that there are some people, especially conservatives, that like to think that this is a sign of success and this is a sign of something that's good in our society. That they'll say, I don't care. It's their money. Well, yeah, but no. I mean, the point of this money is that they would at some point not need most of this money. That their lives are going to be so complete. Let me actually make this even more outrageous for you, okay? Let's just say you had to spend a paltry $100,000 a day. Every single day. Okay, so you might not be able to really get the five-star place in Vegas, but you're pretty much getting a $5,000 to $10,000 hotel room, which is still going to be a pretty good hotel room. It's not like you're living, you know, in a refrigerator box on the street like a lot of homeless people do, for goodness sakes. You're going to have a pretty good life, and you're going to have top-of-the-line food, and you're still going to have designer clothes, and you're still going to be able to live wherever you want and buy whatever you want, because you have $100,000 per day. Times that by 365.25, which is the amount of days per year. Times that by 50. And you get to $1,826,250,000. So let me just also put this number in perspective with Jeff Bezos once again. Jeff Bezos can then live. This is a 50-year cycle, by the way. We should mention this is a 50-year cycle I just did. You know, you're paying $100,000 per day, every single day of 50 years. You're living an amazing life. And you've only gotten to $1 billion. Jeff Bezos can do this. That's 50 years. He can do this for 100 years. Jeff Bezos right now could live 5,000 years. I want to repeat that number. 5,000 years spending $100,000 a day. That's too much money. His kids, his grandkids, his great-great-grandkids. My God, it's just, you know, is this really what success is? And I say this because as you start understanding the monumental nature of the amount of money the wealthiest people in this country have, and they don't need any more. They just don't. Meanwhile, we have people right now in the streets who are starving to death, who are dying from treatable diseases, who are dying of homelessness. And I know conservative guy is out there will want to fight me. How dare you not let the billionaire have all the money? Like that is some sort of thing that they're vested in. But at the same time, we'll say, it sucks to be you, to be the hungry person who's dying on the street or the person that's dying of the treatable disease. They'll be the ones to say how it sucks to be them. And they'll claim to be Christian while they do it too, which is just a hoot. These conservatives will claim to be Christian as they put forward one of the most obscene standards we have ever had. Now, I know you can't put in an instantaneous one-time tax, but I think at this point we could honestly say that any person who is making more than, say, $50 million in a year, which there seems to be a lot of now, any dollars they make over that $50 million, we tax at a 50% rate. And we take care of that person. It's not because that person is going to starve to death if we put this tax in. And I want to make sure we're very clear here. They keep the first $50 million at the current tax rate, which is basically nothing for wealthy people because there are so many loopholes in the tax system. They can, if you're paying taxes and you're really wealthy, you're a fool. There's a lot of ways you can get away with it. But after $50 million, basically, your money, it basically, you don't need any more. And yeah, I can say that. Because if you've got billionaires doing their own space races like their 1950s hot rodders trying to drag race over by the old drive-in theater, then there's a problem in the system. So yeah, $50 million, anything over 50% tax, and we take care of the needy. Now I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back because I know the next thing is, Matt, how dare you? There's benevolence of the wealthy to help us all. I'll get to that. Let me come on back and I'll touch on that. Gary, I'll get your phone call as well. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. If you start doing the numbers, you start realizing that the reason why these guys are doing space races is they've got more money they can possibly spend. Now, one of the things which has always been great about America is that you can be the biggest jerk ever, but if you make a fortune, you can buy your legacy. And you know, through the history of this country, we've had many museums, we've had many libraries that have come on out. Many institutions that have been funded by this. And one of the arguments you'll hear from people is, but Matt, if we tax them now, what about the benevolence of waiting? Shut up. All right. First of all, I want to make sure I say something. You got $50 million. We're not going to touch at any kind of level. So, and once again, just let's talk about the ludicrous nature of that. You know, if you're living, we've already kind of gone through the craziness of trying to spend $1 million a day or just even $100,000 a day and trying to do this. $100,000 times 365 equals $36,500,000. If they make $50 million, they still can live a lifestyle where they're spending $100,000 a day. And they got $13.5 million in reserve in case they want to splurge. I don't know. I mean, the problem with this idea of why we can't look at what is too much is because the reality is that these numbers are so outrageous. When you think about that Jeff Bezos... Jeff Bezos could live for 5,000 years, 5,000 years at $100,000 per day at his current wealth. Don't tell me we don't have to clean this system up. And not only can we should say that, you know, your benevolence is appreciated because they're going to have tons of money if they want to be benevolent later on to try to redeem their image afterwards. They'll have plenty of money to do so. But as well, I think you have to look at when you get this much money and you basically can't possibly spend it all. You know, what value are we as setting up as a society here? There is too much money. And by us acknowledging that and saying, okay, you know, you probably shouldn't be doing your own space race. You know, if you're that wealthy, then you probably need to be paying a higher tax rate. Then, you know, I mean, if you were that stubborn that you can't see this problem while people starve in the streets, while people are hungry, we could do a lot of good with this. A lot more than taking William Shatner into space, and nothing against William Shatner. I'm sure it was a magical moment. But at the same time, we could do a lot more with this. The fact that there are people who are dying on the streets, and we have a society that ignores that while we applaud greater and greater wealth at a rate which is not even possible to even comprehend. I think that that's just such an amazing problem. And I think we have a day of people. Let's make sure we understand one other quick thing here. And Gary, I'll get to your call here in a second. But let's make sure we understand something. The reason why these people are this wealthy has a lot to do with the benevolence of this country, the warm embrace they have gotten from America. They have, because of the economic structure of this country, because of the people of this country, and because of the safety and security that the United States gives them, they have been able to build these massive amounts of wealth. They would not be nearly as wealthy without this country, and it's time for them to say, I'll give some of it back. If they were in most countries, they'd have to be buying a personal army to keep them from being assassinated by the locals who basically don't have 5 cents on a day. If they were in Europe or any other developed country, they would be there getting taxed at a much higher rate than we do. The reason why their wealth is so large is because they have been able to build it within the safety and security and the system that is America, on the backs of the American people. I'm not against capitalism, and I'll fight you to the death if you look at me and say, allowing someone to have $50 million per year at the current tax rate is somehow socialism. You're a fool. You don't even understand what socialism is at that point. And only taxing them at the higher rate on anything over $50 million. But at this point, we have to start reining this in, because it's not doing our country any good to prop up a very small percentage, a minuscule percentage of a percentage, at the expense of the rest of us. Gary is in Minneapolis. Gary, welcome and thanks for holding.
Thank you, Matt. I just got a few things to mention. We were sold a bill of goods by this corporate global economy, you know, that we have, and they ship jobs down to Maquiladora to make cars in the first place. I don't know where they make them all now, these poor countries. And I bought a Plymouth Valley in the mid-70s for $4,000. Today, that car would probably be at least $30,000. I can't afford new cars like I could when I was younger. And what Biden's saying now about what you're talking about, he sounds more like one of the New Deal liberals I've heard. I haven't heard that since LBJ doing the government to help us like that. And we got to get the most we can out of Manchin to get what we can. And, you know, the mention of the New Deal, Roosevelt wanted to change this country. There never was hardly any middle class until Roosevelt's New Deal. And I just want to say they're expanding that. It all changed after LBJ.
All right. Thank you very much, Gary. I appreciate it. A lot of it, you know, you need to have real leadership, because, I mean, it's just the fact that there are people out there who will fight you to make sure a guy who has $177 billion, who could live for 5,000 years on $100,000 per day, that person can get more money at the expense of the rest of us, please. As my tax rate keeps going up, because I'm one of those poor sods that's still stuck in the freaking middle class. Heaven forbid. 952-946-6205. When you start running the numbers, you see how freaking ludicrous it is. And it becomes a case where, like I said, I guarantee you there's some conservative that's going to be all socialism. Yeah, like I say, socialism doesn't start when you say, I'll give you your first $50 million, we'll tax you after that. That's not socialism. That's called freaking common sense. And heck, I would understand a lot of people saying $30 million is the cutoff zone. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. I got a lot to get to with the Minnesota Coronavirus Report. That's coming up next. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I know there's conservative guy out there. How dare you? Hey, dude, I'm not saying we take the money and I put it in my pocket. I say we take the money and we make it into the betterment of us all. I mean, and like I said, it's not like I'm against wealthy people. They still get the $50 million a year at the current tax rate. And afterwards, it's only a 50% tax rate. They can make, say, $150 million. They still walk away with $100 million a year. More money than they possibly could spend in a single year. Meanwhile, I'm tired. I'm getting tired of seeing people starving in the streets of this country, in this country. I'm tired of seeing people die of preventable diseases in this country. We'll get to COVID update here in a second, especially when it's brought to you by ignorance. I'm tired of the homelessness. The average cost of health insurance last year was $22,000. $22,000 was the average cost. How many people have that much money, additional money around to afford health care? And yet you're sitting here and telling me some billionaire who has more money than they could possibly spend in 100 lifetimes should be able to double and triple it because that's America. No, America used to be us caring about each other, not into some sort of freaking race where we try to have one or two really successful people who've earned their success off the backs of everyone else. We're supposed to be united states. We are a union. We're supposed to be in this together. And looking at a wealthy person and saying, yeah, after $50 million, we're going to put a 50% tax rate in you. That's not socialism or communism. If you think so, you're a freaking idiot and you don't know a damn thing about politics. What that is common damn sense. But I'm sure you can sit there and laugh and laugh and laugh at the people who are starving to death or dying from treatable illnesses or dying of homelessness as you then go to church and see how pious you are. Oh, I'm so pious. I'm Christian because I hate gay people. I get it. You're all broken. But we used to care about each other in this country. We used to have a bond as countrymen. It just doesn't exist anymore. And this is just another example of it. And the predictable response I'm laying out here, which I dare anyone to say I'm not right, 1,000% correct on, is just the latest example in how ludicrous this whole system has gotten. We shouldn't be applauding and admiring what these people are. We should be saying, sweet Jesus, how in the hell did we allow this to happen? Not saying you can't be wealthy, can't be upper class, can't have your champagne and have your buffet on some, you know, woman that you have paid to basically put food on or something. You'll have more than enough money to do that. It's just that I don't think that we should ever have anyone in this country have enough wealth that they can live for 5,000 years, 5,000 years at $100,000 per day. That's ludicrous. 952-946-6205. COVID update and a lot to get to here. From the Minnesota Department of Health, 5,277 newly reported cases, 43 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 8,925. The 5,277 new cases does not include cases waiting intake processing. The health department said over the past week in COVID-19 cases grown so much the capacity, resulting in a temporary backlog. As of November 8th, the state reported that 3,505,911 people had received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine. 3,307,336 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 591,263 booster shots. Percentage of Minnesota population with at least one shot based on groups, 5 to 11 is only 3%, but that's pretty much maxed out until they get more vaccines. 12 to 15, 59%. 16 to 17, 64%. 18 to 49, 67. 50 to 64, 78. And how about 65 plus? Nicely done. 96% vaccinated. Salute. Total population, 63%. Completed the vaccine series. That jumps to 70.3% when excluding kids under the age of 12. Through November 9th, the number of people hospitalized with COVID-19 in Minnesota was 1,159. That's up from 1,129 reported on Tuesday. Of those hospitalized, 257 people are in intensive care. 902 were in general hospital care, the most since December 16th. The 5,277 positive results in Wednesday's update were from 40,312 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 13.9%. We are going in the wrong freaking direction. We are going in the wrong freaking direction here. And the vast majority of this is in Republican counties, in Republican areas of the state. The vast majority of these cases, it's just don't know what to do anymore. The state's positivity rate in recent COVID-19 diagnostic testing increased to 9.3, the highest rate since December 10th. Indicating the coronavirus remains widespread. Minnesota ranks 6th among states for its rate of new infections over the past 7 days, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Not for the first time, Minnesota health officials are urging all unvaccinated residents to get the COVID-19 vaccine to help further prevent spread of the coronavirus, which is once again raging statewide. Right now, we have ourselves in a truly alarming spike in cases in recent days, said Minnesota Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm, referring to the situation as COVID blizzard. Based on the date samples were collected, the state averaged 4,000 cases per day, November 1st through the 5th, with incomplete data yet to be revealed in the days since. On November 1st, it was 4,311. On November 2nd, 3,191. November 3rd, 3,989. November 4th, 4,037. And November 5th, 3,745. What's more, the large numbers reported in the state's daily updates indicate that nothing is slowing down. On Monday, the state reported 4,253 new cases, which represents data from November 6th. On Tuesday, the state reported 7,173 cases, and there were 5,277 cases reported Wednesday, although data on those past two reports includes potentially thousands of backlog cases from the health department. They just didn't have the manpower to do the testing. The spike is bad. It's crazy, but it would be much worse, especially with many more hospitalizations and death that weren't for the fact that most Minnesotans now have the protection of the vaccine. But many people, close to 40% of the state, are still not protected. We need all Minnesotans to recognize the fact that we're in a pandemic storm like the one caused by the Delta variant. Individual decisions have implications, not only for the person, but for the families, the communities, and the fact the entire state. Well, the case is around 40% of Minnesotans aren't fully vaccinated. At least some of that remainder may have been immunity from the past COVID-19 infection. However, the CDC study recently found that getting vaccinated is more effective at preventing the COVID infection than relying on immunity from a past bout, and is also far more effective at preventing hospitalization and death. What they say is this, that if you had COVID, okay, and then you got a shot, is that you are, that's the best. That's like the gold standard. That you got, if you had COVID and then you got infected, the chance of you even getting COVID again is actually pretty slim. They're saying if you've been vaccinated and didn't get COVID, you've got a pretty good chance. It's the people that are not vaccinated. That's the problem. And most of them are in Republican areas. There's a growing consensus among state officials and clinical leaders and research leaders that waning immunity does have something to do with the most recent wave. She believes that some of the recent breakthrough cases in Minnesota are among people who are vaccinated earliest. The first vaccine recipients in Minnesota got their shots on December 15th, with the vaccination process expanding and rolling into the months that have followed. Chris Erisman, who we had on the air with us on Monday, director of the infectious disease in the Minnesota Department of Health, says waning immunity, relaxation on mitigation measures, and cold weather leading to more indoors are among the possible explanations for the alarming case levels. Well, people just not caring. It says that's a big part of it right there. It is then even more kind of, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. A vaccinated Vikings player went to the emergency room Tuesday evening with breathing problems from COVID-19 infection and remains hospitalized in stable condition, according to head coach Mike Zimmer. The Vikings did not identify the player, but ESPN said it was guard Dakota Dozier, who's among five players placed on the COVID list within the past week. He's stable now, Zimmer said, but it was scary. I'm not a doctor, but it was a COVID pneumonia or something, he added. He had a hard time breathing. The Vikings isolated players included at least two who are vaccinated, Dozier and center Garrett Bradbury. The Vikings have retested 29 people, including Zimmer, as close contacts this week after placing two more players on the COVID list on Monday. Safety Harrison Smith, linebacker Ryan Conley, the tackle Timon Paris also remained quarantined on the COVID list. Smith, like Bradbury and Dozier, tested positive as well. So I don't know why football players thought, well, first of all, my religion, I've never imposed it before on a vaccine or a flu shot or anything, but Jesus was very much against the COVID-19 vaccine. That one alone, that is it. If that's your argument, you're garbage. If your argument is, there's still a question. No, they're not. These vaccines have been looked at, tested. They're effective. Well, there are side effects. No, there's not. It doesn't hurt your ability to have kids. It doesn't magnetize you. It doesn't turn your blood green. It doesn't. Stop it. You're pathetic. Just get vaccinated. My standard, once again, I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life. If you're against me, there's something seriously mentally wrong with you. And I'm at the point, this is where I'm at. If you look at me and say, I disagree, there is something seriously mentally wrong with you. If you listen to me and say, I don't want you dead, I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt, and you say, oh, I'll show you. Really? What the heck's wrong with you? Get vaccinated, please. For goodness sakes, please get vaccinated. Take a break. Come on back. I got more on COVID when we do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Continuing on with the Minnesota coronavirus update, I should mention Native Roots Radio coming up next. Robert Pilot and crew, they will be in the 6 o'clock hour. If you're not listening to that show, it's an exceptional show. Basically, I think the only place on radio in this country you're going to hear Native American issues from a Native American perspective, and it will educate you greatly. Listen, 6 o'clock hour coming up tonight right here on AM 950. It's an absolute freaking privilege to be the intro to that show. Minneapolis School District has become what is believed the first in the state to require unvaccinated high school athletes to be tested weekly for COVID-19. Decisions surrounding COVID-19 testing and vaccine requirements are now left up to individual school districts in Minnesota and therefore not tracked by state agencies. The Minneapolis School Board voted unanimously on Tuesday to require the testing during the period from Monday to March 4th. We are not afraid to be a leader on this, board member Jenny Arneson said after the meeting. I think it's a clear consensus. We recognize this measure will protect students and keep students in the classroom. The board can reevaluate the policy in the spring when COVID-19 numbers may look different. The new rule aligns with guidances issued in the state's health and education departments last spring when officials urged student players as well as coaches and referees to get tested weekly. The Minnesota State High School League also recommends regular testing for students and staff. Minneapolis schools will offer testing exemptions for students who have received COVID-19 vaccine, which is now available in all school-age children. Finally tonight, and this story. This is, in life, Dr. Christopher Foley, a beloved husband, father, and grandfather. He cycled regularly, played handball, and was a passion for Irish music. And as a physician who trained in internal medicine at the University of Minnesota, he became a natural medicine doctor. Foley's passion lay truly in taking care of other people. He brought this to his Vadnais Heights practice. Foley said he also, though, spread falsehoods about COVID-19 pandemic and vaccines. In blog posts over the last year, Foley wrote on his practice's website that he was dangerous to wear masks and the drug ivermectin was proven treatment against COVID-19, a drug he prescribed for patients, even though the Food and Drug Administration warns against it. He reposted false claims about the vaccine made by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., as well as known opponents for vaccines who've been banned from social media platforms. Those widely debunked claims run contrary to widely held best practices for treating and preventing COVID, but for some who believe them, misinformation has played a role in developing severe illness and the virus or even dying. That includes Foley, who died in October from complications from COVID-19. He was 71. At his funeral, Foley's son, Logan, confirmed his father's death from COVID and that he was unvaccinated. Foley's death certificate says tobacco also used to play a role in his death. Story from NPR. Let me just say this. Well, first of all, can I bring this? So was the guy smoking in the end? Can I say this? If I walked into a doctor's office and he's got a heater, all right, why don't you drop your trousers here? Let me just put this in the old, you know, ashtray over here. Menthol. You know, was he smoking all the way to the end, or is this smoking that he did when he was younger and it was playing a role? Or did he just hang out in smokers' bars or something like that? I'm actually more fascinated by that because, like I said, I don't care how respected you are, if I walked into a doctor's office and you're like, hey, I got a little Camel Wide here, let me finish this sucker on up. Love these things. I know, horrible, but yeah, tasty, tasty. I hope he wasn't, you know, smoking towards the end. Like I said, if I walked into a doctor's office and there was a doctor with a carton of heaters, like rolled up in his shirt, like he's, an extra in Grease, I don't think I'd be going to see that doctor. I know you're going to try to sit there and try the defenders of this guy are going to sit there and they're going to say, oh, Matt, isn't it tragic he died? Yeah, it is. It's very tragic he died, especially as a person who's a man of medicine, who should have seen the fact that this was dangerous and that a horse dewormer, no matter what orifice you put it into, is not an effective remedy for COVID-19. He should have been out there saying, you know, it's clear wearing a mask is a good idea. I mean, you don't see doctors going in and saying, you know what, I'm going to do this surgery maskless. It doesn't matter. No, they acknowledge that wearing a mask during surgery is a very important element of preventing the spread of diseases. And he went out there and told people that was dangerous to wear masks. That's the tragedy here. But what really is going to be the tragedy is this, and this is what I want to make sure we do. I want to make sure everyone remembers Dr. Christopher Foley, not for being a product of medicine, but for being a fool. For being someone who basically ran with a political agenda as opposed to a medical one. That should be how he's remembered. We're done today. We'll be back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.